Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. For 6.5 decades, the happy details of planning a family reunion, organizing a mutually convenient meeting place, scheduling time to enjoy meals and reminisce together, have been impossible for thousands of Koreans. Since the end of the Korean War, reuniting or even communicating with family on the other side of the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea has been complicated, most often impossible. There's a glimmer of hope now since the leaders of North and South Korea met a week ago and promised to work for an official end to the war. Today we meet a photographer and filmmaker who has created a traveling exhibit of photos and interviews that delves from a very personal perspective into how that war divided not only a nation but families. The exhibit is called A Long Separation, and the artist behind it, Laura Elizabeth Pohl, is with us in studio to tell us about it. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
Explain the situation that North and South Korean families face.
So when the Korean War ended in an armistice in 1953, it was divided in much of the way that East and West Germany were, where the Soviets kind of controlled the northern part of the country and the Americans controlled the southern part. And this ended up leading to a permanent division when the Korean War ended in an armistice in 1953. And people are not legally allowed to communicate with each other. They can't email, they can't call, they can't meet, they can't FaceTime. And so thousands of family members, they just have no idea what has happened to their loved ones in North Korea.
And there's even a specific term in Korean?
Yes,
divided families?
Yes, it's called isang kajok.
Can family members ever see each other?
They can. So there have been periodic reunions that are organized by the South Korean Red Cross and the North Korean Red Cross. And these have happened, you know, just infrequently. There have been 20 since the year 2000. They usually happen in North Korea, and about a couple hundred family members will get to go to North Korea for 2 or 3 days and meet their loved ones. It's very structured. There's not a lot of free time. So you maybe have, you know, 4 or 5 hours alone with your family members.
Do you know when the last reunion was?
It was in 2015, yeah. So just a couple years ago.
Are South Korean immigrants to the U.S. eligible for reunions?
They are not eligible for the reunions right now. Sadly, they are not. There is an organization called Divided Families USA that is working to try to make that happen. But as of right now, no.
The desire to connect, I gather, it's about even more than just seeing relatives. It's about honoring loved ones and deceased family members.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, in Korean culture, family is very, very important. And your hometown is also a very important part of your identity. So all these people who are originally from North Korea, you know, they can't visit their hometown. They can't reminisce, as you were saying before, about what it was like to be here or be there with their family members. And they can't see their family members. You know, I got interested in this story because my great uncle was a separated family member. He was the oldest in his family. He left behind his parents and his younger siblings. And as an oldest son in Korean culture, it's very important for you to carry out certain rituals and, you know, honor your parents in certain ways. And he could never do that because he was separated from them. And it was really hard to hear him talk about how he regretted leaving, you know, but no one knew they were going to be permanently divided from their family members when it happened.
Your exhibit includes not only portraits, but interviews with the people that you made contact with. Let's hear what David Park had to say on the point you just made.
At this moment, unfortunately, I cannot imagine my mother's face, actually. It's a very tragedy, you know. I try to figure out, but it's very difficult. And also my sister. But my mother's doing and her sacrifice for me, and I still clearly understand and clearly memorize that. The tragedy become the positive way to develop my personality for the solid Christian leader. Still, I try to understand the positive thinking to use that tragedy to good things than God's providence. I understand that.
Tell us about David Park.
So David Park actually lives here in Baltimore. He is a separated family member. He was 12 years old, about 12, 13, when he became separated from his family in North Korea. He was originally from the North, and, you know, things were not going well with the war. So he and his mother and his younger sister decided to leave together. But at the last minute, his mother found out that her father had been detained. So she decided to go back to try to help him. And she urged her son, David, to go ahead and try to leave this war-torn area. And so he left in his school uniform. He was carrying a bag of rice. And he never saw his mom or his sister again.
You've known about divided families for some time. Why did you feel the need to do this project now?
So I'd actually been thinking of doing this project for a long time, probably at least since about 2002, 2003. That's when I first started to hear the stories from my great uncle about, you know, leaving his family behind, what his family was like up there, and how he felt about it now. But I thought, you know, this is a story that a Korean person should do. I'm a Korean American. I think someone in Korea should do this. So I kept like checking in on this story over the years, and I saw no one was really doing anything about it. At least I couldn't find anything about it. So finally, it was the year 2014. I was actually living in Rwanda, and I had an assignment in the Philippines. And I decided at the end of this assignment in the Philippines, I'm just going to fly to Korea. It's close enough. I'm going to go there. I'm going to work on this. And I hired a fixer and a translator to help me out. I speak Korean, but I'm not totally fluent.
Your mother is Korean.
My mom is
Korean. Your dad is American.
That's correct. Well, they're both American citizens now, but my mom's originally from Korea. So yeah, I went up there. I think it was for about 10 days. And I interviewed my great uncle and I photographed him. He was the very first person. And then I interviewed and photographed a whole bunch of other people. None of them are actually in the exhibition because I don't know about you, but the first time I try out like a new project, I don't always know what direction I'm going to go. So the first few, you know, shoots aren't great, but it, you know, set me on the path to continue shooting. So that's what I did. And then I moved back to the U.S. About a year and a half ago, actually 2 years ago. And then I thought, I want to exhibit this. Like, I want to make this happen. And it just so happened that, you know, in the last year or so, South Korea and North Korea have really been in the news. And I think it's just fortuitous that I planned my exhibition to go in the first couple weeks of May. And now South Korea and North Korea are really in the news because of the summit between the presidents of South Korea and North Korea, and then the upcoming summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un.
That's photographer and filmmaker Laura Elizabeth Pohl here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her traveling exhibit, A Long Separation, which looks at families divided between North and South Korea. So tell us what people can expect when they come to the exhibit.
So when you come to the exhibition, it's actually a big truck, like a U-Haul truck. And it's wrapped in white vinyl, and the exhibition portraits and all the captions in English and Korean are printed right onto the vinyl. So you'll be able to just walk around the truck and look at the photographs, read all the captions in Korean and in English. Everything is made, like I designed everything so that it's just like you're at a museum, as much as possible with looking at a truck and being outside. And there's also an audio portion where you will be able to call a phone number on your cell phone and be able to hear portions of the interviews I did with 8 of the 10 people in the exhibition. And there's audio in both English and Korean.
So these portraits are on vinyl out in the elements.
Yeah, so they're like printed onto the truck, basically.
How are they safe? Aren't they washing away?
No, so there's a kind of waterproofing that goes onto the vinyl so that so the pictures don't wash away. The one thing I was worried about was the possibility for graffiti. Mm. So this kind of wrapping of the vehicle, it's usually done for marketing purposes. So you might see trucks that have like, buy my cell phones or, you know, buy my books. But I'm doing it as an exhibition instead.
Why did you decide on such an unconventional style of presentation?
Actually, originally wanted it to be inside the truck, but when I started contacting potential venues, they told me that I would need to be compliant with the American with Disabilities Act, which was going to be really hard for doing inside of a truck. So then I thought, you know, it's probably better to just do it on the outside. And that way, even when I'm driving around, people will be able to see the photographs and they'll see my hashtag, they'll see the website, they'll see the name of the exhibition. And I'm actually, you know, I'm driving from Newport News, Virginia, all the way up to Lexington, Massachusetts. Baltimore is about the middle point of my trip. And I'm kind of hoping that I get stuck in traffic somewhere on I-95 so that, you know, people will look out the window and see my exhibition. And especially in the DC area, maybe there's someone who will see it and will be like, oh yeah, I can do something about this.
You are not only the artistic force behind this idea and the photographer, but you are the truck driver.
Yeah, I'm the truck driver.
And you only stay a few hours in the places you identified.
Yeah, exactly. So in most places, I'm there for the whole time that the library is open. I'm visiting all public libraries plus one community center because I want the exhibition to be accessible to everyone. I want everyone to feel like they can come and experience it.
And right, your itinerary now is on the East Coast. Do you intend to go farther afield?
I wish. So I would love to bring this to the West Coast. I would love to bring this to South Korea, but I really need funding. So I've paid for everything myself, except for a small bit of my exhibition, The Prince, were paid for by Yale University.
How did you locate the people you photographed?
So I worked with some really great fixers and translators in South Korea. The first person I worked with, he contacted the South Korean Red Cross, who helped connect us to people who were willing to be photographed and interviewed. And then the very last time that I photographed, I worked with another fixer and translator. Her name is Yula Kim. She's actually coming here. I'm flying her in for this so she can see how I've done everything. And again, we worked through the South Korean Red Cross. They identified some people that might be willing to be photographed and interviewed, and off we went.
Was everyone you contacted willing?
No, actually. No. So from that list, the last time I went, there were probably about 90% of the people willing to be photographed and interviewed.
Is there one who particularly sticks with you? Whose story?
Yeah, there is. So there is a woman in the exhibition. Her name is Jo Jang-gum, and I went to interview her in October of 2015. I had set this up with the fixer maybe about a month beforehand. And we arrived on the day that the South Korean Red Cross announced who had been picked for the next reunion. So I just happened to be in South Korea when this was happening. So the translator and I showed up at her apartment, and she had literally just found out she wasn't chosen, maybe like an hour before she found out. And she was just devastated and also very angry. So we started the interview anyways. And then in about 5 to 10 minutes in, she got a phone call and we could hear her saying like, yes, I'll be right down. Yes, I'll be down there in 5 minutes. And the translator and I are looking at each other like, what? We're supposed to be here for like an hour or 2 hours. And she's telling someone she's leaving. So it turned out she was so angry, she had hired a taxi to come and pick her up and drive her to the South Korean Red Cross office so she could go chew them out. And so we rode with her to the Red Cross office, and she joined a whole bunch of other people who had arrived there to do the same thing. I have like huge, huge empathy for how she felt, but also sympathy for the South Korean Red Cross, because what they're doing, it's very difficult. They can't pick everyone, right? And the method for picking people is that, you register to be on the reunion list, and then when they're finally going to have a reunion, there's a random computerized process to pick people. But you're weighted more heavily if you're older and if you're trying to meet with a direct relative, like a parent or a child or a brother or a sister. She was in that category of being old, I thought, and also trying to meet a direct relative, but she still didn't get picked. So 60% of people on the South Korean Red Cross reunion list are over the age of 80. And the reality is that most of them are probably not going to be able to meet their relatives in the North.
Let's hear what Jo Jong-yukun told you.
My sisters have children and also have a hard life, so they may not have time to think about me. But I have never forgotten about them. Whether it's a long, long night or a short night, every single day, I never forget about them. When I was 5 and 6, we played together and ran around together and played house together. I remember it all. I've lived positively and with hope, and now I can't see the future. Why? I'm over 80 years old, and I don't know what's going to happen to me over time.
That pain, that longing, I assume you heard that over and over.
Oh, yeah, over and over. And, you know, thinking about it, it really saddens me. You know, these are people who didn't choose to be separated. It's different if you've decided you don't want to speak to your parents or your brother or your sister or your kids. But when it's not something you've chosen, I think it's very, very difficult.
Are you continuing to make portraits?
Yes, I want to continue. Right now, I'm consumed just with the exhibition, but I want to continue photographing and interviewing, and I'd like to find more people in the United States to photograph and interview. I think it's really important to document their stories.
What do you hope people will take away from visiting a long separation?
So the first thing that I hope people take from visiting this exhibition is learning about the unintended long-term consequences of the Korean War and just war in general. So that's the first thing I hope people take from this exhibition. The second is to think about how we think about people who live in North Korea. You know, in this country, when we talk about North Korea, it's really in sociopolitical terms, and it's quite focused on Kim Jong-un and his regime and how things are there. But there are real people there, like you and me, just normal people trying to live their lives. And some of them are loved by people who live in South Korea, who live in the United States. And so we need to think about them as fellow human beings.
I'm grateful to you for telling us about this. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Photographer and filmmaker Laura Elizabeth Pohl. We've talked about her exhibit, A Long Separation, a look at divided families in North and South Korea. The mobile collection of portraits will be at the Tacoma Park Community Center this Sunday, May 6th, from noon to 5 p.m. The next day, Monday, May 7th, it will be at the Miller Branch of the Howard County Library in Ellicott City from 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a talk by Pohl that evening. Then next Wednesday, May 9th, it moves to the Waverly Branch of the Inokrat Free Library in Baltimore from 11 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. We have a link to all the details at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Katz. This is On the Record. Quick break and then a Stoop story. Stick with us.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.